Okay, so we took a quick break, and we're back now. And in the break, we're talking a little bit about bringing back the Youth Leadership Banquet. So, Dan, could you tell me a bit about your work with that?
Sure. So the Youth Leadership Banquet, the Columbia County Youth Leadership Banquet, started back in the late 80s when Matt Morrell was the executive director. And it went on for several years until COVID hit. And in COVID, you saw downtime for 3 or 4 years. And when I was brought in to be the youth director, I was asked to reintroduce it. So it took about a year, but now we're going into our third year. So the last 2 years have been pretty successful. And we've made a couple changes, which I think have really benefited the entire program. For years, we were recognizing the high school kid in the name of Lewis A. Pirro. And so we decided as a youth advisory board, what other person in the community has been so consequential, has participated in so much in terms of being selfless, being a leader, providing service, and the committee came up with Richard F. Tracy. So we have been now, the last 2 years, recognizing the middle school kid in Richard F. Tracy's name. So Lewis A. Pirro, Richard F. Tracy, those are two what I call giants in the community that both played pivotal roles in my life, personally and professionally. So I find it to be an honor to do this. It's a lot of work getting 6 public schools, Hawthorne Valley and Questar, to coordinate with them to get their applications, and it's a good 2-3 month period to pull it off, but it's enjoyable. And at the end, we have a banquet for, I think there was about 130 people there, and it's a really good night to recognize the leaders, but also recognizing the people that came before us. And so it's enjoyable. It's also worth, I think, recognizing that Richard F. Tracy and I ran against each other for mayor in 2005. He was successful, and my wife would say that she was successful because the mayor's right. The mayor's position is not an easy task. Sometimes people think it's an easy task, but it's a tough job. So he was successful, and at that time, that's when 2005. So I think 2007 is when my wife really thought it'd be a good idea, because the two kids were like 5, 7, and 9 at the time. Maybe we should move, because at that time politics started becoming somewhat of a blood sport and, you know, way too personal. And it just felt like if we can move and get a fresh start, I think it'd be good for everybody. And we did. I mean, it's not like we moved to Siberia. We moved 30 miles north, but it was a good change. I think it's been a really good call. And our personal life has done well, professionally has done well. And, you know, after retiring and coming back here to serve in this role, I think my experience in this community really just brings a level of understanding to this job that it's not easy to get without all the experiences. I mean, I look at it as like I graduated from the police academy, I was on the school board, I worked for the state, I worked as a trainer. So, I mean, my background really, I think, has positioned me well to have a real understanding of not just programs, but how they're funded and who to get access to. So I think my experiences, good and bad, have really created an opportunity for me here.
What made you, or what drew you to this job that you have now?
Well, I think there's a couple members on the Board of Supervisors that know me well, know my background. The job became open, and I think it was open for a good 6 months to a year that no one was in it. And they knew I was retiring, and they asked me if I'd be interested. And I thought about it, and I mean, it doesn't feel like a job. It's something I love to do. So it was an easy, it's an easy answer. Yes, absolutely, I would love to do it. And I think they're very appreciative of the effort that I brought, and and the experience that I brought to the department. And, you know, I look at it this way. I'm like building off of, I'm one of four. Like 1980 was the creation of the County Youth Bureau. Pat Malloy, who was another long time, him and his wife have served this city well for years and years and continue to do it. He was the original youth leadership, youth bureau director from 80 to 85. Matt Morrell was 85 to 2000. Jessica Bosney was 2000 to 2022, and then me. So there's only been four of us in this position, and I've really had the ability to know them all personally, know their work, build off what they've done, and kind of kept what they've done and it added things. So it's been a really good transition.
So you talked about the youth leadership banquet, and were there some other things you've added or brought back?
Well, what we've been able to do is, I have a really great relationship with the Department of Social Service Commissioner Bob Gibson. His brother was Chris Gibson, the congressman. Bob is just, I don't think you can find a more ethically hardworking, honest, responsible, compassionate leader in social services than Bob Gibson. But he has access to a lot of prevention funds. So he kind of calls me his talent scout. So I don't have a lot of money, but I have access to where I see talent. And so what we've been able to do now, which is really good, is so we've funded the Bindlestiff Circus. We've funded the exercise program with Greater Hudson Promise Neighborhood. We funded the boxing program, the Custom Auto Gym, where Mike Tyson boxed across the river. And now we're funding Got Game Sports, where it's one of the larger not-for-profits that deals with sports and basketball and skills and drills. So what I've been able to do is add things on top of keeping things. So I think that's what I've been very appreciative is using my experience to find a talent, find funds to support them, and having access to people that can help us.
So you've talked a bit at points about making this case for funding youth as much as, you know, say, you know, government funds police or funds roads. Was that a case you were making when you were in politics?
I made this case way before it was popular to make this case. People thought I was crazy, but I would argue that the agency that's sending us $170,000 for 17,000 youth are also sending us $20 million for 200 youth. So the disparity was so great. When I was on the Board of Supervisors, I always argued that the county itself should also participate in funding the Youth Bureau. Because right now the Youth Bureau is pretty much funded just by OCFS, or the umbrella underneath them. So I've been fighting for funds for youth. I'm not suggesting there's not funds in the county for youth, just not in my department. Like I said, social services, they're funded fairly well, and they have a lot of access to money for prevention funds. And I think whether it's youth development or prevention, I don't think they're much difference. I mean, if you're preventing, you're developing. If you're developing, you're preventing. So they have a lot of funds there, and that's where I've been able to utilize some of their funds. One of the programs that we're really proud of, and we're doing really good work, because we've collaborated with Cornell Crawford Extension, and Lisa Galena is their executive director. And what we were able to do is, again, reintroduce a program called Think Differently. And it's all around kids with autism. And how do we reach those kids? How do we reach programs that can reach those kids? How do we reach those families? And so we've been working with the county, Chairman Matt Morrell, Bob Gibson, and Lisa. We were able to secure funding to start putting programs on at Cornell, where parents can come learn a little bit more about the issues, the kids can participate in programs while they're there. We've also reintroduced it out to the Columbia County Fair, where that 5-day fair, we have a pavilion enclosed just for kids that are on the spectrum. So we have all kinds of like things that they can play with. It's insulated, so it's the kind of keep the noise down. And which we've done a really good job with really exposing that. We get a couple hundred kids out there that get in that room. Parents are so grateful and thankful. And we even participate with the Chatham Fair to lower the volumes and the lights for half a day so the kids can participate in the rides without being too stimulated. So that's another really good program that's moving and it's strengthening. So those are some of the things that we've really been able to do at the county level.
Yeah, thanks, Sherry, for sharing those those initiatives. Yeah, so I'm curious if we can kind of go back to you mentioned when you're making this case for, you know, funding youth. You said people would kind of act like you were crazy.
Yeah, I think because anyone that's in charge of the purse strings don't want to hear someone complaining about what to do with the purse strings. And I get there's only a certain amount of money. And I get it's easy to kind of grandstand and yell, I need money over here, when in fact there's only so much money to be had. I think I'm arguing more about a vision than money. I'm arguing about an idea and understanding of how do we change the trajectory, because our police department hasn't gotten smaller and our population has dropped 50%. So you're talking about our issues haven't changed too much. And it could it be because where we're spending our money? And that's what I want people to think about is a vision of, and this is where I'm really careful, because there was this idea of defund the police a couple years ago with all this. I was never about defunding the police at all. Because I think what I did when I was the youth commissioner at the city youth center is I was having police officers come in street clothes, playing pool, playing bass. So I wanted our kids to know our law enforcement and them to knowing in a good way. Not I see a cop that's bad. Here's a cop that plays pool with me. Here's a cop that plays basketball with me. So this was never about not the need for law enforcement. It was always about we've had this now. Nothing's really changed except our population. But we still spend this kind of money on public safety. When are we gonna start looking at spending money on youth programs? In the same way that you wanna make sure that you live up on 7th Street and no one's gonna rob your house because you feel safe. We should have the same vision as we look at kids saying, we wanna fund them because we wanna make sure they are successful. I want them to feel the same way of feeling safe as them feeling successful. And it's not easy because there's only so much money to go around. But I just think if we continue this route, it just seems like a cyclical type of predictable, almost construct. So I'll always make that noise and hopefully it won't piss off too many people at the purse strings per se. But I think they know what, and I think they stand for the same thing. I just don't have the decision, do I put 10,000 here with youth programs or 10,000 here with law enforcement? I'm not making those decisions. I'm saying just give me more money for youth. So it's easier yelling from the stands sometimes, but I'll continue to do that.
I'm curious, maybe can sort of think in the future a bit, you know, what are sort of your wildest dreams for youth funding or youth programming in Hudson?
One of my goals, a vision I have is sort of like, so I don't think you have to reinvent the wheel. I think if you just see what works and make an effort to kind of boil it down in the pill form and encapsulate it and replicate it. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of Jeff Canada from Harlem. I think the amount of money we spend on education, for every teacher, there should be a community member. Back and forth. So there's totally collaboration, totally connectivity, and Because I think we just have to realize the population that's struggling in school most of the times are struggling at home. I mean, it's not like everything's great home and I'm going to come here and it's a struggle. It could happen sometimes. But I think the general consensus is that struggle doesn't stop when you come here. There's still remnants of the struggle. So I think that if you start spending more time, effort, and money on preparation and prevention, kids would be more apt to hit the school day running instead of kind of being resistant. So that would be a vision I have. That would be something I think would work. I think it's proven to work. And at the same time, it's proven to be expensive.
Let's say maybe a new family moves to Hudson. What sort of things might you tell them about what there is to do around here?
It's interesting you say that. We were out doing me and Commissioner Gibson were out doing the Greater Hudson Promise neighborhood cleanup day a couple weeks back. And we run into a family. The gentleman was a graduate from Horton Valley. His wife migrated from Poland, and they have a son. They're homeschooling them because they're concerned with the school system. So because they're homeschooling them, they don't really have access to the social group. And the kid's a great athlete. And so we kind of pointed him to the direction of the services, like he loves soccer. So we have a 6-week soccer program. Try to connect them to Greater Hudson Promise Neighborhood, led by Joan Hunt, probably the most impressive not-for-profit in the county. Her coordination, her leadership, her ability to collaborate, hands down. I'll take one chance to give my pat on the back. I hired her in 2003 when she first came home from college. She was a young adult woman who was looking to participate, and she was teaching the kids music lessons when I was the youth commissioner. I left, came back 20 years later, and she is running the show. It is just so, so impressive to see. So that's what we try to do, is connect them, because Joan has antennas in just about every section of society right now. So yeah, it's interesting you say that, because that's actually happening right now. And unless you're out walking the streets, you're not gonna run into people. So yes. Good question.
Yeah, I'm wondering too, do you feel like kind of opportunities for girls are growing around here?
Well, I would say my understanding of Perfect 10, the program that runs out of the Armory, the library, I actually had an opportunity to speak to their executive director, Tina, is her first name. And she took me through the entire program, all the principles, all the concepts, and the oversight. I think that is probably one of the most impressive outcome-based youth female programs that I've seen. So I don't know if there's enough of just female-led stuff, but I know that's one of them. It's not the only one, but I know it's one of them. And I think the balance of programs for female, male, non-binary, whatever you want to call it, that everyone has access to programs where they can thrive. And I think that's what these not-for-profits are doing. I think a certain segment of kids might go to the clubhouse with MHA. They might not go here, but they go there. And if they didn't go there, and if this wasn't here, they wouldn't go anyplace. So I think what's happening is you're seeing each child, each youth, having access to a support system and a program where they can thrive. I think that's what you're seeing in Hudson, which is great.
So you mentioned, the Youth Leadership Banquet is one of the places where you really enjoy celebrating youth. And you also mentioned there's that one story where I think there a young man who went on to become a deputy sheriff, and you're really proud of kind of what he had done. I'm curious, like, have you been able to, you know, keep in touch with a lot of the people you'd worked with when they're younger?
Yes. So, again, I think what's happening is a lot of the young kids, and which is interesting, is Katie Hilverman, who's the Spark executive director. She was a lifeguard for me back in 2003. And so a lot of our kids that are doing well end up moving on and moving out. Katie is an exception to the rule. She moved out and returned to make a difference. And so I still, you know, social media allows you to remain in contact to some degree. But yeah, I make an effort to try to connect. And I think there's enough kids that have gone through these programs that are, whether they're school teachers, whether they're working for TBW, whether they're elected office, whether they're the mayor, you know, I mean, they're everywhere. So I think it's the history of working and growing up that, yeah, I think the connectivity still remains pretty high.
Curious, and you know, we don't need to talk about this if you want to, but have there been cases where, you know, maybe someone grows up and their life didn't turn out necessarily the way you were expecting?
Yes, there's one in particular. One in particular who was a young kid. He'll remain nameless, but I know his name, I know his face, and he had some struggles. There's no question, kind of a volatile home life. And I can remember him at the youth center. And we actually made sure there was a staff with him one-on-one. He responded perfect. He engaged. He just knew there's no cursing, there's no violence, there's no disrespect. But he would end up with some issues in school. So we had some connection to the school. So what we try to do is we hired a former public school teacher to work with kids after school. So we were trying to do that a little bit. But he was having some issues in school, and I could tell he was, not for a better term, a kid on a bubble, per se. Like, he can go either way. It's going to take a lot to push him in the right direction, but it's not going to take much to push him in the wrong direction. And unfortunately, after I ran for mayor, I was not returned to the Visage Youth Commission, so I moved on. And quite a few years later, I found out that he was charged with murder, and right on Fifth Street. And it's just disheartening, because that's one, but it's one that I think we could have saved. So, yeah, and I mean, that's an individual case that we'll always remember. But and that's why I knew those type of things were possible. That's why I brought his mother in. We sat in my office at the youth center. We were trying to create plans to make sure that, you know, we're paying attention to behavior, but we want you to enjoy the youth center too. So we were really trying to work with the family and him. And when my time was up, I'm not sure what happened, but I know quite a few years later, that's what was the outcome. And just another unfortunate construct in an ugly cycle.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And yeah, so in that case, you mentioned you had sort of individual working individually with the family and the mother in that case. And I think you said, was it the hours 4 to 6 you felt like were the most important for?
3 to 6.
3 to 6, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just kind of being right after school.
Yeah, that's it. Right after school, they get released. It's active hours, and if it's not, it's got to be structured, but not. And there's got to be discipline, there's got to be predictability, all those type of things. But there's also got to be something in there that allows them for some choice to have some decision making. So if they're in a game room, you know, you can play 5 or 6 different things. But it's structured time. Predictably, it's not. It's going to be safe. And in terms of expectations. It's consistent. So I would say that it was structured, it was disciplined, it was purposeful, but purposefully somewhat flexible at times. Like we didn't want them to be like, okay, you go here, you go here, you go, and everything's designed for them. So we wanted them to have some choice, some option. Because to become a good decision maker, you have to make decisions, right? So we had some of that flexibility in our program. And I think the kids enjoyed that.
I'm wondering, you know, maybe when you're growing up, what were some of those decisions that you had to make?
Well, you know, for whatever reason, my decisions were always some reckless decisions, some inappropriate decisions, but not harmful decisions per se. Just enough to say, come on, man, you know that's inappropriate. That's not appropriate. You can make a better decision. You know, so yeah, I don't know. I think maybe self-esteem, self-confidence when it came to education, the lack of it might have caused me to make some decisions that are probably less, what one would argue would be less educated than others. But yeah, some of my decisions were push the envelope, challenge authority, you know, you can get by taking shortcuts, those type of things. And you know, you look back at it and you're going, hmm. But again, in those days, you had a big community, people looked after each other, and you know, we support each other. And I was fortunate enough to end up doing quite well. But that allowed me to make some strong connections to what I wanted for the kids, because I knew what I needed and what I didn't have. And that's what I think really drove me to create an environment where every kid would thrive.
Could you maybe just name some of those things that you feel like you needed?
Some structure, some predictability, strong relationships, I think opportunity, and I think sometimes a good kicking ass, you know, someone to say, look, no, we're not doing that. So I think all that is needed, and I'm not suggesting I didn't have some of it. I think I just was, like, I was one of four brothers that somehow, I don't know, I figured I'll push it to six instead of three, you know, and that was always seemed to be my, became sort of like my personality. And, but, you know, I think ultimately I figured it out because of the support system that was in place, because of the Jerry Woods, the Mo Cranks, the Dick Tracys, the Lou Pirros, those type of folks that were really there. I think I benefited from the web that they created. As well as my parents. My parents were remarkable. And they had four boys that they never gave up on and stuck through, stood by everything. So I would say a strong household with a really good web outside, I think that's what I was had access to.
During our break, I think we were talking about when you had run for mayor in 2005, and you had mentioned that one of the things your parents taught you was how to handle losing. I'm just curious if you would maybe want to say a little about that.
Well, yeah, my dad, who I really try to resemble a lot, was always known as a man of just a true gentleman. Didn't raise his voice, was amenable to many things, was able to connect with different folks. And I think after I lost, it was kind of a volatile time in Hudson. It was like the us versus new type of thing. And so I think after I lost, it was a little bit of a, I would say a little bit of a shock, but it shouldn't have been. My job not being, me being able to stay in my job, I think that created like some real emotional issues for me. And I think at that time, it was time to go, because it was clear that my decision making and being, in terms of being humble, using humility, being respectful, I think my wife could see it was just time to kind of, you know, remove, and then finally we reintroduced it, and you know, 17 years later, I think we're in a much better place. So I think sometimes, even it wasn't totally my decision to move; it was my wife's decision, and it worked out best for us. So it was probably one of our best decisions, is to kind of just remove yourself from, like, I don't know. It seems like when it's like a power grab or a power of just personalities. And sometimes it's just easier to remove yourself, and I found it to be the perfect thing for me at the time. It was the best decision we made as a family, is to kind of just, you know, sometimes you go too far and get too deep in, and I think that's where I might have been, and it was time to just pull back, remove, and it was the best decision, for sure.
For, you know, say, kids growing up here in Hudson today, what would you maybe tell them about how to handle losing or maybe making mistakes or things not going your way?
Yeah, I think it's sort of like, how do you marry competence and competition? I mean, how do you create leadership out of losing? You know, it's sort of like, it's not the program, it's the people that run the programs. And it's about having the right people around who can actually role model an issue where something might not have gone right, but they're behaving appropriately. So it's not just the verbal commands, it's they're visually seeing it and hearing it. So I think a big part of it is being mentored and mentee'd and in the right environment. And just, you know, resilience is, I think, an innate product of the human body, mind, and I think just knowing that there will be another day, and it's like you're trying to make sure that you want them to compete and understand the value of winning, but also be able to handle losing and gaining value out of that. It's a really tough concept, because it's not like you want to have everybody wins type of thing, because that's not everybody gets a trophy type of thing. That's not preparing kids for real life at a certain age anyway. But it's really about handling adversity. It's really about handling success. It's really about handling leadership positions. It's handling losing, or you know, all those things together is what should be being displayed for them, whether it's in school, whether it's on the football field, baseball diamond, hockey rink, whether it's at the youth center, whether it's here. All these things should be part of the environment, just part of the fabric. And, you know, when it's not, you know, kids struggle because they're learning on their own. And so hopefully, I think that's what I would like to see.
Yeah, I just keep thinking about, like, you use this word, like, the web, right? That, like, people like Dick Tracy, like, Lou Pierre had created, and, yeah, like, where do you see that web being built, and how do you expand it?
Yeah, I think it's really about connection, collaboration, communication. It really is. It comes down to that. I mean, I know who I need to contact immediately when I'm looking for something, and it's Joan Hunt from Greater Hudson, because she has access to everything. If she needs something from the county, she contacts me. So I think it's really about awareness and knowing where the web is and being able to expand it. And we are, you know, it's expanding as every program, every area in the county might need some help. It's just growing. So yeah, I think the web is something that will continue to grow and needs to continue to grow. And it needs to be a strengthened web, not a weak one. And there's a real level of consistency and predictability with what's going on right now with the web.
Yeah. So yeah, I do want to kind of respect the time that we've done. But you know, I want to thank you for, you know, all the time that you've offered and, you know, everything you shared about your work in public service and, you know, growing up here and, you know, all the kind of, you know, things you're able to share about your vision. So is there anything you wanted to say before we...
No, I want to thank you for the opportunity. Let me participate. And you're headed back to Michigan tomorrow.
I am, yeah.
Yes, and you're in your master's degree.
Yeah, PhD.
Doctorate. Okay, even, all right. And what is the doctorate in?
It's in the program is called American Culture, but basically I'm doing U.S. history.
Good for you. Awesome. Well, good luck to you. I hope you enjoy your visit in Hudson, and it's a pleasure meeting you.
Yeah, it's great to talk.
Pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Tim.